Welcome to episode 7 of Sailing Infidels, On the Outside Looking In, More Storms. This is the continuing tale of the Sailing Infidels and how the COVID-19 crisis evolved from what once was pleasant self-imposed isolation to what seemed like virtually inescapable involuntary confinement, while the lockdown itself was threatening to become a lockout for us. Though the powers that be may have thought that our service was secured through to late spring thanks to the natural 24/7 guard duty provided by the mighty North Pacific, they failed to take into account how powerful anger can be after a prolonged period of isolation, neglect, and abuse. Did they really think that we were so weak and needy that they could do or not do as they pleased on their own terms and that there would be no consequences? 2 weeks had passed since we proved them wrong, and we were no longer trapped. But having just spent 2 weeks in a COVID hotspot, we were about to discover how much our world had actually changed. We motored down Chismore Passage and spent some time in the bay at the south end of it, looking for the ideal, precise spot to anchor for the duration of the approaching storm. In the end, we decided to anchor next door in Lawson Harbor instead. While neither was the ideal anchorage, Lawson was the closest thing to ideal that was available to us on short notice. So, Lawson Harbor it was, and it probably would have been better if I had chosen to go just a little bit closer to that boy. This anchorage would provide us with shelter from the increasing southeast winds that were expected to reach 45 to 55 knots by Saturday morning. The most unpleasant part of the evening was that, because we didn't have a damper in the flue, our newly installed wood heater, dubbed Toklat, couldn't cope with the downdraft caused by the wind and would occasionally fill the cabin with thick smoke. We awoke Saturday morning to increasing winds as promised. Thanks to our protected anchorage, the highest wind speed that we saw was only 35 knots. Surprisingly, this coincided with the anchor alarm sounding. As quickly as we could, we donned our foul weather gear and headed for the bow, firing up the Garth Monster on the way. I fought my way to the bow against frigid wind and horizontal rain, and stood for a few minutes hanging on to the inner stay for security as cosmic debris pitched and yawed violently in the wind and waves. By observation of landmarks on shore, we confirmed that we were indeed dragging. Wendy jumped back to the helm and began powering ahead toward the anchor as I ran the chain up and into the locker. Our anchor chain was old, rusty, and twisted, making the chain skip on the gypsy. With the boat straining against the anchor and putting excess tension on the chain, raising the anchor was a much slower than usual process. All the while, despite Wendy's efforts at the helm, we were still losing ground, and with the extreme noise of the wind and in the cockpit, the engine, shouting for more throttle was futile. We plowed a furrow in the seafloor right through the harbor and nearly out into Bloxham Passage. Just as we were getting into Bloxham Passage, the anchor reset itself and brought us to a stop. Though the anchor was set, we could not stay there. Secure for the moment, we took a few minutes to reorganize. At that new position, we were so far out of the anchorage that I could look over into Arthur Passage to the east and see the Herbert Reef's marker on the other side of Brake Island. I told Wendy to power ahead a little harder once again, and I resumed with the windlass. And then she broke free. I gave Wendy the signal to power us back into the harbor as I raised the anchor and then went back to the cockpit. We chose a slightly different location, dropping the hook a little closer to that boy. We never knew why the boy was there, but in avoiding it, we left too much room between our bow and the shore, allowing for too much fetch to build. Secure once again, we retreated to the cabin below to dry out and warm up.
So, we just got in from picking up anchor and re-anchoring because we drug. Our trusty old Rachna let us go. That was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was tons of fun.
Yeah.
It's blowing 35 plus knots out there.
Yeah, and raining.
Oh yeah, slush, actually.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, pretty slushy.
Nasty. We were almost back out in the passage.
And our GPS.
Oh, yes, and all the instruments failed at the same time. So, good thing we had Navionics on the phone.
Through the rest of the day, we watched as the winds slowly tapered off and, right on cue, turned back to the northwest. We celebrated our victory and the end of the howling wind by breaking out a growler of beer. Wendy, armed with a sailing directions book and me on the charts, planned our next move. We would have to leave Lawson Harbor at first light in order to make it to an anchorage that would give us protection from these new northwest winds that were set to go full-scale gale on us by the end of the next day. The weak but strong enough cell phone service was handy to have. Weather reports were always a challenge anywhere north or west of Port Hardy. The Environment Canada marine weather channels on VHF are hard to receive. There's hardly any cell service after Port Hardy. These were the days before Starlink. So the next day, we were up before daylight and motoring out of Lawson Harbor as the skies lightened.
All right, we're getting ready to leave Lawson Harbor. This is our first stop in the, after Prince Rupert. Been here for two nights. Looks good out there. For some motoring on down to whatever anchorage. We have an emergency anchorage and we have a preferred anchorage, and we're just getting ready to leave now. Wendy is come out here. What are you doing?
I am getting the water maker filters all cleaned up and ready to make water.
Are you so done?
I am. So
ready. Okay.
And then I gotta get dressed.
And then you gotta get dressed. So giddy up.
The weather was gray, a little foggy, and calm for the whole day. We arrived at East Inlet and discovered a beautiful anchorage almost completely surrounded by big mountains and sheer rock cliffs. The weather forecast may have been wrong for all we know. We were too well protected to have seen any wind. We did, however, see ice, just a thin icing over the inlet one clear night followed by a beautifully sunny day. We stayed for a few days, enjoying the natural beauty of our surroundings. There wasn't much to do, though. We went ashore in search of firewood but found little usable. Everything was too wet. We took some anyways and suspended it in a net above Toklat to dry. My original blog about this trip was entitled In Search of the Lost Spirit Bear, but we were too early in the year for the bears. They were all still lost in dreamland, I suppose. The way this trip turned out, it should have been called In Search of Firewood and Weather Forecasts. Again, we were faced with the need for a forecast, smack dab in the middle of nowhere, and again, no VHF weather and no cell service. Back then, we had a Garmin inReach, so I texted a friend who had offered his marine weather retrieval and texting skills to help us overcome this handicap. He transmitted a favorable forecast for a nice downwind sail for the rest of the way down Grenville Channel to Hartley Bay. It coincided perfectly with the tidal conditions and daylight hours, so again, we were off to another anchorage and looking forward to a great day of sailing. We got out of the channel that next morning to find about 10 knots of wind directly on the nose. The remainder of the trip down Grenville Channel was calm and quiet motoring. Well, as quiet as it can be with the Garth Monster providing propulsion. Still, the beauty, even with the low clouds shrouding many of the mountains, makes the trip enjoyable. Though the visibility may be less, the atmosphere created by the clouds and fog of mid-coastal British Columbia is fantastic. In hindsight, as we approached the entrance to Wright Sound, I should have hoisted the main. When we left the confines of Grenville Channel, the wind was blowing 25 to 30 knots on the starboard beam out of Lewis Passage, and the wind waves were large. It was just rowdy enough that I did not want to go to the mast to fight with the mainsail, so I rolled out the Yankee to a starboard tack and struck a southeast course to get across and into the lee of Gill Island as quickly as we could. Suddenly, we had a new plan. Head for Butedale. The Yankee boosted our speed by a couple of knots and helped to keep the boat a little more stable in the washing machine we were in. Within about 15 to 20 minutes, we were in calmer water. Unfortunately, at that point, the wind was coming out of Whale Channel and right on the bow. I opted to stay close to Gill Island and motor into the wind along the shoreline for about 4 miles until we had the right angle to again strike out across the sound. Then I pointed the bow toward Point Cummings on Gribble Island, and with the wind again on the starboard beam, we took a northeast course toward Mackay Reach. Once in Mackay Reach, the wind abated and the waters calmed. The rest of the run to Butedale was very calm, and there was little to do but marvel at the waterfalls cascading down the steep mountainsides. We pulled up to the dock at Butedale just before dark. We weren't sure if we would be alone at Butte Dale or if there was a caretaker there. I had done some searching online trying to find out if it was inhabited, and if it was, if we'd be welcomed or shunned. It was clear from the moment we landed that we were alone. After 4 days of skulking around this private property, looking for usable firewood and a weather forecast, we decided to make way for Clem 2, a small native community. We knew our presence would not be appreciated there because of COVID-19, so when we arrived, we just quietly anchored in the nearest anchorage to town so that we would have access to the internet and a weather forecast. Shearwater on Denny Island was only another day away, so we would have the opportunity to reprovision there. We spent only one night there and then continued on our way for the 43 miles to Shearwater. It was another day of motoring, so we would need fuel. We would also need a few basic food items, and I was hoping to get some fuel filters. Obviously, we knew that COVID-19 was still a big deal, but we had no idea that the marina at Shearwater was officially closed, despite having looked online when we were still in Prince Rupert. Their website gave no indication whatsoever that anything was out of the ordinary. Regardless, we were still 120 miles from the nearest town. This was our only option, and they would have a legal duty to fulfill our needs. We motored into the marina and read all the COVID-19 protocol instruction signs. As directed, I called on the radio and was instructed to tie up, mask up, and come up to shore. As we came off the ramp, we saw a store with an open sign in the window. We started towards it when a woman rushed up to us, yelling at us that we could not be there, that we could not be tied to the dock, and that we most certainly could not go into the store. The only things she would allow us to do were to anchor out and get fuel in the morning. I got my fuel filter because a friend had worked there and arranged for a filter to be delivered to the fuel dock for me. Every summer since our first year caretaking the lodge, we experienced the same thing when re-entering society. It's a massive adjustment. When we got to town in 2018, our credit cards had expired, my driver's license expired, the bank machines wouldn't accept my debit card, and I couldn't reactivate my phone. It was insane, and each problem amplified the others. But 2021 definitely took the cake. Even 2020 was closer to normal than 2021. It was 20 miles to our next anchorage, Codville Lagoon, and we needed to get there and get hunkered down for the next big gale. We entered the large lagoon and motored around, looking for the best protection from the south and southwest. Where I really wanted to be was far too deep, and where the depth was good, it exposed us to a lot of fetch. That was where we spent the first night, but the next day, while getting ready for the gale, I decided to drop a lead line over and see what the bottom was made of. The lead weight come up completely clean, so it wasn't mud. The chart indicated rock and was probably correct. We decided to do another tug test and wound up dragging the anchor. I decided to move. We left the lagoon and motored straight across Fisher Channel to a tiny little spot called Long Cove. We had to position ourselves just right because of the tight quarters, but when that anchor grabbed, there was no doubt we were hooked. Once we were ready for the impending gale that was forecast to begin later that evening, I lit the fire, Wendy made dinner, and afterwards we started watching movies. I think it was around 10 p.m. when the first big gust snuffed out the fire and filled the cabin with smoke, effectively ending movie night. There was no point in trying to keep the fire going or going to bed. Wendy grabbed some blankets and we moved over to the saloon table where we could keep an eye on the wind speed and our tracks within the anchor alarm circle. At around midnight, I went out to check the snubber for chafe and for other issues, while Wendy maintained a retriever's eye on that anchor alarm. The howling in the rigging was a near constant pitch, and as the night wore on, I began to fade away. I nodded in and out pretty much all night. 30 knots seemed to be the intensity that woke me, and anything higher kept me awake. With no fire and the wind howling through the rigging and right through cosmic debris, it was a long, cold, and very loud night of living on the edge of the anchor alarm circle. The highest wind speed observed was 42 knots, and the anchor never budged. Finally, at daybreak, the wind diminished and veered as promised, and the barometer bottomed out at 1,005 millibars. Wendy went to sleep at the table, and I poured myself a cup of coffee and began contemplating lighting a fire. We spent the entire day resting, recuperating, and rocking and rolling in the leftover slop that came into the anchorage from Fisher Channel, while preparing to head further south.
Join us in the next episode for more excitement. We appreciate your support. You are the wind in our sails. New episodes are released every second Sunday evening. Explore our captivating blogs and thrilling videos and contribute to the project at www.sailinginfidels.com. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram for updates, photos, and videos, and track us at www.noforeignland.com. Don't miss out. Stay connected and be part of the incredible journey.